The work of foresight is not actually about prediction. It's not even really about forecasting. It's about learning. I agree, we cannot predict the future. No one can tell you what the world is going to look like on December 31, 2029, which will be the last day of this decade. But we can develop futures. We can develop a foresightly perspective on what it could look like, right? So that's what we focus on, plausible futures. We don't focus on predictions. Here's a way of thinking about prediction. If I were to say to you that X will happen on December 31, 2029, that's a prediction. If I were to say to you that there's a 75% chance that X will happen on December 31, 2029, that's a forecast. What I'm saying is the question we're asking and trying to explore, not trying to answer, trying to explore, is what could the world look like on December 31, 2029?
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Normally, I speak with association and nonprofit CEOs about their organizations and their journeys, but today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Jeff DeCagna, Executive Advisor at Foresight First, LLC. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on, Joanne. I appreciate it.
Hey, Jeff, you say that 2024 is a really big milestone for you and for Foresight. Tell us why.
The reason is that 2014 was the year that I wrote an article for Associations Now, in which I coined the term the duty of foresight. It was an article about BlackBerry. How did BlackBerry go from being one of the most dominant technology companies in the world to being basically an afterthought in a relatively short period of time? And one of the reasons was that the board of that company had failed at its duty of foresight. And I realized that that was a pretty important idea for associations. And so I've spent the last 10 years writing and speaking and thinking about the duty of foresight, working with boards on the duty of foresight. So this milestone year is a very important year. And I think it's also a very important year for our community because we are about to begin the second half of this decade that I refer to as the turbulent 20s. And we are just a matter of months away from the start of the second half of the decade on January 1, 2025. And the duty of foresight, the work of foresight, the practice of foresight is now critical for our organizations as they look at the challenges that they're going to face along all dimensions, social, technological, economic, environmental, political challenges that are facing our organizations, facing our community, facing our country and our world as we look toward the second half. And we very much need associations and their boards to focus on the duty, the work, and the practice of foresight.
Well, Jeff, for my listeners who are not familiar with the concept of foresight, how do you define foresight and how does it differ from, say, traditional strategic planning, which most boards are familiar with?
So foresight is an intentional process of learning with the future. It's about projecting our thinking into a future time horizon and using a combination of data, information, and imagination, all the available inputs that we have, to essentially create a picture or a story of what that future could look like, whether that's 60, 72, 84, 96 months or more into the future. And imagining, looking at that future and asking questions of it, what does that future look like? How do we address a future that could be unfavorable to us or unthinkable for us, the literal worst case scenarios? And while I think that there is definitely a connection and an important connection between the work of strategy and foresight, I also think they serve different purposes. Strategy is very much focused on a shorter term time horizon, in my view, the next 12, 18, 24, 36 months. The focus is on how do we create value with the stakeholders that we currently serve. And the participants in that, you know, I think are going to be a little bit different. Whereas foresight is that longer term time horizon. And it's really about how we're going to leave our organizations better than how we found them. So these two conversations can be happening in parallel with each other and connect at points where it's appropriate for them to connect. And I actually think that boards should be spending more of their time and attention on the work of foresight, while other younger contributors focus more on the strategy aspect of things. I'm not an advocate for strategic planning. I don't think that we're going to plan our way into a dynamic future, which we're already experiencing a world of greatly increased volatility. And I don't think that's going to abate. So we shouldn't be trying to plan our way into what's next. We should be learning our way into what's next. And that is one aspect that connects strategy and foresight, is they're both learning processes. One is the shorter term and the one is the longer term. So I think that we want to build this capacity in boards and in other contributors to really prioritize that long-term thinking that is so essential, as I said, especially as we move into the next 60 months of this decade.
So Jeff, I had another guest on who said that her board practices foresight, but at first they resisted because they said, we can't predict the future. That's arrogant. So what do you say to a board that says that, or to a chief exec who says that?
Well, I certainly understand why people say that, but it's based on an orthodox belief about what foresight is, because the work of foresight is not actually about prediction. It's not even really about forecasting. It's about learning. I agree. We cannot predict the future. No one can tell you what the world is going to look like on December 31, 2029, which will be the last day of this decade. But we can develop futures. We can develop a foresightly perspective on what it could look like, right? So that's what we focus on, plausible futures. We don't focus on predictions. Here's a way of thinking about prediction. If I were to say to you that X will happen on December 31, 2029, that's a prediction. If I were to say to you that there's a 75% chance that X will happen on December 31, 2029, that's a forecast. What I'm saying is the question we're asking and trying to explore, not trying to answer, trying to explore, is what could the world look like on December 31, 2029, right? That's about a 60-month time horizon, a little over 60-month time horizon. We can do that. And we can go longer than that because we have information, we have data, and we have imagination that enables us to do that. So I think we have to change our existing orthodoxy around what foresight is and why it's important. And the methodologies and practices of foresight enable us to have a disciplined and focused learning process to understand what the world could look like that we can use to facilitate better decision-making today.
Well, let me ask you a question because I'm fascinated by this. I had another chief exec who said, we are trying to imagine what the profession will look like 20 years from now, 25 years from now, and then work backwards to come up with what we should be doing. So it sounds a little bit foresighty. And what they were trying to do is say, here's what could happen to, I think it was ultrasound. And it was actually a very exciting thing that they were doing. How would they have developed a notion of what the future could look like? How does an organization get started with this? What data, what skills, what prep do they need?
Well, it's going to differ for every organization, so I probably won't go down that pathway. I do think, though, that 25 years is a very long time horizon to imagine things. I think it's a great process to consider.
Oh, so that's too long. Okay.
Well, I hesitate to say it's too long. I think that one has to bring great humility to futures that are more than, say, 120 months. And I tend to think about things in months rather than years. I think that's a practice that everyone should adopt when they're thinking about foresight, is thinking about the time horizons being sooner than we think. And months is a way of thinking about things happening sooner versus years, which feels like it's off in the distance. So I'm not saying it's too long. I do think that it's challenging, especially if technology is a driving force of that future, as it sounds like in that example, because we don't know We can imagine what those technologies might be, but we can't necessarily have a high level of confidence around what those technologies will be or how they'll play out. So there are futurists who absolutely go in that direction and try to do forecasting and futures of 25 or longer years. And again, I think it's a great process to consider, but I think for boards specifically in the work that I do, whereas that is an exploration of plausible futures that might drive organizational work or create inspiration or creativity around things, I like to focus on foresight as something that facilitates decision-making for boards in a shorter time horizon period. So I encourage boards to focus their attention for foresight in the 84 months beyond strategy. So if you think about a 36-month strategy window and then an 84-month foresight horizon, I like for boards to situate their focus in that 84-month foresight horizon so that it's facilitating their thinking and decision-making as they shift back from the future and into the present, and then helps them say, okay, what is it we need to do to ensure that we are moving toward a favorable future, and how are we avoiding as best we can unfavorable and unthinkable futures for the organization? So I sort of differentiate that a little bit in terms of the approach that I would take with a board around the foresight conversation, the learning work they need to do to facilitate their decision-making today, and to then learn with the future as it unfolds, as they continue and their successors continue to guide the organization into the future.
Okay, so if an organization says, wow, this sounds really amazing and a really, really good exercise for the board to be doing, how do they get started? What guidance can you offer an organization that says, we're going to embark on a traditional strategic planning process, but we'd like to get started with foresight? How do they even get started?
Well, there are two things in what you said there that I'll start with first. First of all, they should not think of this as an exercise.
Okay.
Because this is the work of boards, right? And the reason why I pick on that is because when we tend to describe things as an exercise, it sounds like it's secondary. It sounds like it's not essential. It's not an exercise. This is building a practice. It's also, when we describe it that way, what that often means is that it will happen once and then we'll never do it again, or we'll do it in 3 or 5 years again. And that's not the way this should work. So I think the first thing that they should do is say, this is the work of foresight. This is the process of building a practice of foresight. Because again, this is a question with boards, as I see it, where they put their attention. Board attention, even more so than time, is the most finite and invaluable resource that we have. And so we always have to ask ourselves, what's the best use of board attention? And I think this is the most important use of board attention, is having this long-term view. And that's consistent with the idea of the duty of foresight. You know, the duty of foresight is about standing up for our successors' futures. And in order to do that, you have to have that consistent attention on these questions. So I think we have to shift our language on that. The other thing is, I would discourage everyone from doing strategic planning, because again, I don't think that's the right approach for the world in which we live, but instead look upon strategy as a learning process. I think that where any foresight work begins for me, especially for boards and CEOs and CXOs and everyone who's going to be working at that level, all the contributors to that kind of process, it begins actually looking backward. And that is examining the orthodox beliefs of our organizations, the deep-seated assumptions we make about how the world works. Every organization has orthodoxy. Every human being has orthodoxy. If we didn't, we wouldn't be able to find our way through every day. We'd have to reason everything anew every single day. But the problem is that our orthodox beliefs are detrimental to our ability to learn with the future. If we're holding on to the past, if we're holding on to ways of thinking that were perhaps more useful 10 or 15 or more years ago, maybe they weren't as useful as we thought they were. Maybe they weren't actually true beliefs. They weren't actually helpful beliefs. They were just what was repeated over and over and over again. And we have a lot of orthodoxy in the association community, especially related to boards and their work, but also in other areas. And I think we have to examine how those orthodox beliefs are having a detrimental effect on our thinking so that we can open ourselves up to learning with the future. Because if we don't, orthodoxy really saps our motivation for learning. If we just believe the belief system that exists in the organization now is appropriate and accurate and will guide us well into the future, then what's the incentive for learning?
Yeah.
So we've got to move ourselves away from that orthodoxy and then open ourselves up for the learning process. And I can tell you that when you start to do that, it changes your relationship to the conversation related to the future. So I think that's the starting point for every organization and every board, is to let go of the orthodoxy. And in its place, by the way, use the conversation around the future to identify what are the justified beliefs that we should hold that are going to move us well toward a different kind of future. We have to change, not only discard the orthodoxy, but we have to replace it with a belief system that is future-oriented, future-adaptive, that enables our organizations to move into the future. And that will require rethinking, really a reckoning with many of the things that we have held very closely and very dear over the course of the 30 plus years that I've been in associations, and certainly as we look toward the second half of this decade.
Well, that's going to be easier said than done, because, you know, most people can't think beyond a year or two. And Jeff, is that why you say that the duty of foresight remains a radical idea? I mean, I guess tell me why. Why is this radical?
So one thing I would say about how far into the future people can think, I agree that it is a struggle for us sometimes to contemplate, especially now when there's so much going on and we're dealing with so many different kinds of issues all at once. I spoke at the ASC annual meeting about the board's duty of foresight in the age of polycrisis. And what that means is we have multiple crises all happening at once now. You know, we have two wars going on. We have economic concerns. We have environmental concerns. We have political concerns. All of these critical factors are all happening at once, and they all reinforce each other. So it's a huge challenge. That having been said, research tells us that most people feel relatively comfortable thinking within about 5 to 7 years into the future. That's the range in which most people feel they can go. That research I found after I started talking about the foresight horizon, which is an 84-month or a 7-year window or time period. So it's good that people sort of are comfortable in that space. I think that what makes the duty of foresight a radical idea, even after these last 10 years that I've been running about, and I just want to be clear because I didn't say this earlier, the milestone that I'm marking this year is not a celebration for me. It's not a celebration of me. It's not a celebration of the duty of foresight. I'm not in celebration mode. I'm in marking time mode because, as I said before, I think we face so many challenges. We look toward the second half of the decade and we have a lot of work to do to get ready for them. So I think what makes the duty of foresight a radical idea, it's really three things. One is it's the only construct in association management that challenges boards to put more emphasis on their successors than on themselves or on their contemporaries, to push their thinking, as I said earlier, to stand up for their successors, to consider the idea of short-term sacrifices. What sacrifices will we make in 2024, 2025 that will accrue to the benefit of those who will follow us in the future, and especially those successors we'll never know personally, that we will make intentional learning a priority, that we will focus on long-term action, always look at the long-term consequences of our choices. The duty of foresight challenges us to prioritize our successors over ourselves. There's no other construct in association management that does that. Secondly, I think that the duty of foresight really challenges boards to see themselves not primarily as overseers or policymakers or enforcers of policy, but rather as stewards of their organization. They are stewarding a human system, which is the association, as well as any connected human systems that the association is involved with, into the future. And that is not something that we really talk about in associations very much. We have a very kind of narrow and boxed view of what a board is and what it does. And the duty of foresight challenges that and remains a radical sort of reorientation of what boards, where they should focus their responsibility. And then finally, it moves with the world. You know, the duty of foresight started in one place 10 years ago. About 2 years ago now, I came up with another definition of the duty of foresight, the next definition, the one that I've been talking about in this conversation. And it's going to change again because the world is going to change. And there will be a point in time, I don't know when, but within probably these next 60 months, maybe a little more, that there'll be another definition of the duty of foresight because the world will always be shifting. And I think our thinking has to adapt consistently to the environment in which we're in. The duty of foresight challenges us to do that. So for those reasons, I believe that even after 10 years, the duty of foresight remains a radical idea because it really is challenging what boards do, how they think about their role, what their contribution is, and to whom they are responsible as they look toward not just the rest of this decade, but into the 2030s and beyond.
Well, Jeff, you recently launched something called the Future of Association Boards Community Dialogue. What is that? Tell us more about it.
We call it the FAB Community Dialogue.
Like that?
Yeah. We want to put a little fun into it because it can be a heavy topic. So the FAB Community Dialogue is something that launched in July. It was going to be something else. We had planned on working with a partner on this, and Pexium is my partner on this, and I'm very grateful for their support of this initiative, because I think it's important to me, it's important to them, and it's important to our community that we have this conversation. What is the future of our boards in this community? Our organizations matter. I've always believed that. And I wouldn't have committed my career to working in associations and so much of it to working with boards if I didn't believe in the importance of associations and the importance of what boards do. So we need to be talking about what the future of our boards is going to be. So Pexium is a great partner in supporting this ongoing exploration. So as I said, it started in July. We've been continuing the conversation. This conversation will continue into 2025. And really, it's a community dialogue. Instead of doing a survey, which was our original intention, we thought again and we said, okay, you know what? We should really include far more voices in our dialogue than we could ever do in a survey. And so we're reaching out not only to CEOs, not only to directors and officers on boards, but to young people, to our international colleagues, not just in North America, but in other parts of the world, to get perspectives on what are the challenges that our boards are going to face as we look toward the future, and how do we begin to address those challenges? Challenges around board composition and dynamics, challenges around board purpose, around board work, and the wide variety of issues that our boards are going to confront. So it's been a very exciting conversation, and everyone is invited to join. Everyone can join on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn, jeffonlinkedin.com. You will see things on my page to help you find your way to the conversation. And I'm sure we can probably also share some links to help people find their way to various resources of the conversation. But it's an exciting, inclusive, community-wide effort to understand the future of boards. And later in 2025, probably in the spring or early summer of 2025, there will be a report.
Ah, yes.
That will emerge from this conversation ahead of the 2025 ASA annual meeting in Los Angeles. We will produce a report that will synthesize what we've learned over the course of the 10 months of conversation that we're going to have and provide recommendations or ideas and concepts for boards to consider. So it's still in the early days, but it's already been a very exciting process.
Well, Jeff, we'll be sure to include links in the show notes to your website, to any resources, to the LinkedIn page, et cetera, so that people can learn more about this and be part of the dialogue.
Thank you.
Jeff, this has been an amazing interview. I've learned so much. Is there anything else that you would like to maybe close with about what associations and their boards need to be doing to really live up to their duty of foresight?
You know, earlier we were talking about the resistance that might exist to the adoption of foresight, to choosing, and I want to be clear that the duty of foresight is a choice. It is not a legally mandated duty in the way that the duties of care, loyalty, and obedience are. It's not part of that fiduciary responsibility that we talk about with boards. And when I first started writing about it in the earliest days back in 2014 and the years immediately after that, I thought for a moment that maybe what I should do is I should try to make the duty of foresight or try to, you know, figure out there's some way to add the duty of foresight to fiduciary responsibility in a more formal sense. And then I thought again and realized that it's better when it's a choice because it enables us to have our agency and to use our agency in the right way, to apply, direct our agency toward thinking about our successors. And so to overcome that resistance that may exist within a board, something that I ask in every board session that I do and in virtually every one of my public presentations is a fundamental question. And that question is, what will our successors say about us? Because there will come a point in time when none of us are working with boards or serving on boards. We will have moved on to other things in our lives, and it'll be a whole new group of people that we will have never met personally who will evaluate. They will judge what we did or didn't do in 2024 or 2025 or in the years following that to leave things better for them than how we found them. They will make that determination. We cannot tell them what to say. They will decide what we did. And will they decide that we cared about what happened to them? Or will they decide that we were more focused on advancing our own interests in the short term? And I think that's a very important question that every one of us needs to ask ourselves, because I ask it myself every time I'm writing an article or doing a presentation or preparing for a conversation like this one. I'm always asking, what will our successors say about us? And we all have a responsibility to think about that, because that's what we're doing now. We are creating a future for those who will follow us. We are not creating necessarily even our own futures. We're creating a future for those who follow us. And that is the most important thing that every board should be doing right now. And for that, the duty of foresight, the work of foresight, the practice of foresight is essential to leaving our organizations better than how we found them, for the benefit not only of our current stakeholders, but our future successors. So that's the message that I hope everyone would take away from this conversation and internalize as they consider how they want to steward their organizations into the future.
Jeff, that should be a t-shirt and a sign at every board meeting. What will our successors think about us and our work? Thank you so much for joining me today. And I hope you'll come back in the future, maybe after the results have come out of the dialogue.
My pleasure. Thank you, Joanna.
Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. Please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. Please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends. Bye!